Joining me in studio is Charles, also known as CJ Domingo, running for candidate for city council. CJ, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be here with you.
Would you please introduce yourself and let voters know why you're running for city council?
Of course. So as KP just said, my name is CJ Domingo. That C stands for Charles. So on your ballot, I am Charles CJ Domingo. I'm running for Asheville City Council simply because I felt like we needed to get some regular working folks on the council who would be very laser focused on keeping a balanced budget and making sure that we first and foremost take care of all those things we rely on the government to do. Core city services, core city infrastructure, these things must work all the time without fail.
Mm-hmm. Affordable housing is unquestionably one of Asheville's biggest issues right now. What concrete actions would you be able to take to make housing more affordable in Asheville?
Absolutely. And I do include housing as part of that, things that we rely on the government to help us make sure we're staying ahead of. And with affordable housing, we have been making some good strides with the city using the Housing Trust Fund to try and get more big apartment buildings, but that's very slow. Unfortunately, they're not something that you can just pop up like that. And so that process is taking a while. I want to see more opportunities for smaller projects at the same time so we can show people that we are making serious progress and to help more organically grow the changes around the city. A lot of folks may have encountered by this point what they call the missing middle housing study. And what this showed was that we have missed out on natural development from single-family detached homes going to the apartment buildings. There used to be these little cottage courts where you'd see little houses in a group sharing the same driveway. Quadruplexes, duplexes, these sorts of things were restricted against back in the 70s, and we realized that that has harmed our ability to grow naturally. For a lot of folks, like we saw with the Hawk Creek development, when you come to them and you say, I want to make a big project in your neighborhood, there is a lot of trepidation and there's a lot of gut reaction to say, no, I don't want that. But if we had, for example, I'm a big proponent for the city supporting ADUs, these are accessory dwelling units, helping people to build it on their land. A lot of folks have a yard that they would be willing to help build an ADU there and offer that up as affordable housing to help dramatically increase the stock around town to let people move in to these neighborhoods that have a little extra room. And the homeowner gets to participate. They get to collect some of that rent money. They're still going to, my plan would have it stay at an affordable level. So they make a modest amount, but they're still profiting from being a part of the solution. And you eliminate that gut reaction of saying, this is too big, too much, all at once. And instead, organically grow it around town, organically grow it where our roads and our neighborhoods can handle it. So you can get some immediate action, because building an ADU, you can do that in a matter of, I asked a bunch of builders, the most, I would say, optimistic was about 4 to 6 weeks, which I thought was a little too low. The bulk of people said about 3 to 4 months. But again, 3 to 4 months, and if you're building this as your focus, you can have dozens of builders building these projects at the same time, which means that you could see a lot of growth really quickly, which for somebody who is not able to find housing they can afford to be able to live and work in Asheville, that could be a world changer. So I want to see us do more of these small projects while also making sure we continue to chip away at the giant landscape-changing apartment buildings that we want to get.
Great. Thank you. Improving housing affordability would likely make a very large impact on homelessness as well. Other improvement opportunities exist in harm reduction and mental health services. What solutions could you offer to the problems in these areas of homelessness, reduction, and mental health?
So I got a chance to speak with some really nice folks who do two of our most successful programs in the area, a gentleman from ABCCM and a gentleman from the Western Carolina Rescue Ministries. And what they pointed out was that when they are trying to do their program, it's really about making sure that they keep a high level of throughput. We have a big emphasis to try and build the base of the program to get people into the door. But both of them cautioned that we want to make sure we're actually widening. If you imagine it kind of like an assembly line, you don't want to just open up the beginning of the assembly line. You got to open up the middle as well. Because if folks are in that first stage and they stay there for a long time, we end up bleeding a lot of costs paying for that part up front and not providing a lot of throughput in the middle, where we are showing them that their time is being rewarded. People will lose hope coming into that first stage and not getting into this middle stage. And I know that's kind of a detached way of putting it. I'm unfortunately not as much of an expert on this as I would like. But talking to them, what they pointed out is that the most profound thing that we could do to try and eliminate homelessness was that if you look at the point in time counts, the number one cause of people becoming homeless is somebody who just missed a payment, or they had they lost a job, something, or somebody got sick. And these are momentary changes. So something that would really transform that is to help people prevent that bad event from happening in the first place. And so you'll see something that's kind of tangential to this on the upcoming housing bonds, where they mention helping with homeowner repairs, because some folks become homeless because their home is no longer livable. And so by being proactive and helping to get things before they start, we can dramatically reduce the costs of helping people on the back end, and we can help to make the community more resilient by building this sort of network of care for our neighbors. Now, that still doesn't speak to the people who are on the street. And for that, I think that really the best answers for that are going to come from the continuum of care that the city has just really started getting going, where people in the community come together and they start bringing all of their ideas and their solutions. All of these religious groups are able to come in and see what resources they're able to provide, because all of us really want to solve this problem. And I wish I could say I've got some, you know, push button answer. But unfortunately, we're going to see that kind of evolve here in the next few months and a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you support the targeting of houseless people by the Asheville City Police, like what's been done with the homeless camp sweeps or the special operations, which targeted arrests of panhandlers that we've seen over the past few years?
I'm not sure that I would say. I see that there's kind of a multiple levels to this. And so, you know, I don't want to see anybody getting harassed. I don't want to see anybody getting unduly harmed. Just like with any population, there are a very small percentage of bad actors who end up giving people who are not usually meeting with that community their perception. They color it. And unfortunately, this is just part of human nature, where if you only meet one person, say, from Kentucky, and that person was really rude to you, you might have the perception in your mind, oh, Kentuckians, I can't trust them. And so there are some people who kind of color it this way. But I also recognize that a number of people in the communities where some of these unhoused communities have been gathering, there are some bad actors there who have been really making a menace to the people around them. And so is this the best answer? I'm not sure. This is another area where I would like to talk more to people who were there. My experience working as a city employee was that we did have some places where there was more buildup, and we had to dismantle those for safety reasons, because they were blocking fire escapes, they blocked stairwells, they blocked places where fire department needed to be able to get to these fire hydrants. And so when people said, well, you're targeting them, it's like, well, no, unfortunately, we just have a legal obligation to make sure that these throughfares are accessible. So again, I would have to kind of look at each of them on a case-by-case basis.
Awesome. Thank you. Do you support the BID, the Business Improvement District? And this is a multi-part question. Why or why not? And what do you want to see when it comes to the next decisions of the BID process, which includes the governance structure, the management, and the services?
Yeah, so I've been very skeptical about the BID. Unfortunately, I recognize why many of the people who chose to vote for it feel it's necessary. Ultimately, with the BID, we are having people willingly choose to pay more taxes to pay a third party to handle governance downtown, which we used to be able to handle and we could handle. But we have not engaged with that problem in a way to say we are interested in making sure we are meeting the needs of the people here. And there's a whole host of reasons for that, different priorities, a belief that maybe some of the things that are being asked for should not be handled by the city. I disagree. I think that any of the stuff that we've talked about, safety, cleanliness, signage, sidewalks, all of these things are the purview of the city. The city should be doing it. At the same time, the voters have made their voices heard that for the people in that affected area, it came out slightly in favor. So we have the BID, and the city council is committed to the idea that if it doesn't work out, they're going to stop doing the BID. So I agree with the idea that, well, we're in it now, so we'll give it a try. Let's hope for the best, and let's try to make the best BID we can. But at the same time, me personally, as a resident of Asheville, born and raised here, it galls me to think that this became necessary, because governance should be handled by government, not by a private company. But to answer the next phase of that question, now that we have the bid, it's on its way, I want to make sure that we are representing the needs of all Ashevillians. And when we look at this, we see this talk about these ambassadors, and some people were saying, oh, these ambassadors are going to help with security. I don't like the idea of having a polo-shirted police force. Well, I mean, I know regular cops somewhere wear polos, so, but a non-trained security force, I would rather see them be guides. I would rather see them be resources for the community, a sort of living access to everything we keep on the websites for the city of Asheville, for example. People who can go and provide that sort of neighborliness that you would want if you were a visitor coming to a place, but also for the residents here, they can also help to supplement the ways that we keep the city clean. So for example, something that I would do as a city employee is that even though my job did not require me to clean up the sidewalks between the one facility and another that I was cleaning, if I was walking between it, I would stop and pick up litter, pick up any detritus, debris, any glass I saw. I would just go ahead and pick those things up. And if that is something that we could include as well, I think that could be a big help because, again, there's a lot of cleanup to do. When you have a lot of tourists, a lot of mess gets everywhere. As far as the governance structure, I want to make sure that we are keeping a very firm, cynical grip on how decisions are made, because again, I'm very skeptical of decisions made in back rooms in the dark where it's not immediately obvious to every voter, to every person who has a stake in this situation, to know how did those decisions get made, why did those decisions get made, and if something is done in a way that is against the needs of the community, how can we ameliorate that and how can we guarantee that it doesn't happen again?
Since HCA acquired Mission, the quality of care has suffered to the point that it was or is in danger of losing its contract with Medicare and Medicaid. What, if anything, can the city do about the decline of this institution, which is so critical to the well-being of our community?
You're asking a lot of really good, really hard questions because they're very in-depth. Well, the city does not have a lot of mechanisms to force HCA to come to compliance. The only one is I am under the impression they have still not worked out a taxing scheme because they used to not tax the land under which HCA is, or under which Mission is built, because it was nonprofit. It was a, you know, beacon of the community. And they, my understanding is that they have continued to prod HCA to say, hey, we need to talk about taxes because you're making profit. So we need to be taxing some of that. And HCA has declined to come to the table on it. So if that is correct, if my understanding of that situation is correct, I do think that it is well past time that we begun turning the screw a little bit to say, hey, if you're not going to, you know, do something, then you need to, if you're going to behave like a for-profit business, we're going to treat you like any other business. And if you're behaving badly in the community, we're going to begin engaging to try and protect the community. Now, I'm not advocating for anything, you know, beyond the pale here, no extraordinary stuff. But at the same time, we cannot continue to ignore the fact that we could be putting some pressure on an actor in the community that has not been living up to the expectations of our community.
Mm-hmm. Preliminary data indicates that so far the Merriman Avenue Road sort of diet or conversion of a major sector of this key thoroughfare from 4 lanes to 3 lanes allowed for enhanced bicycle and pedestrian access, reduced crashes, and increased bicycle traffic, with its impact on pedestrians still unknown, but we can assume it's probably pretty good. So all of this with an average increased travel time of no more than 14 seconds. How does that information inform your view of the upcoming major Patton Avenue reconfiguration in response to the I-26 corridor?
So looking at the road diet, I know that a lot of back and forth has been had about it. I'll say that in terms of the data, I looked at some of it as a person with a science background. I have a bachelor in science from UNCA. I am really excited to get more data because I feel like we have not had enough to really say for certain this has definitely done this, this has definitely done that, because of the dates that they were able to collect and because it's not been around for long enough to really get robust month over month, year over year data, because in the post-pandemic world, a lot of things changed and we're kind of seeing that change. And it may be that just this is the new normal for us in terms of what we expect to see, in which case, great. But also looking at some previous data, I want to get more about it. But all that to say, I think that overall, we will look back and say, hey, this is a pretty good model that we want to try and put more places, because if we can find the place where this sort of thinking goes, we want more of that. Now, something that I don't think was borne out by the data, I don't think that we saw a huge increase in pedestrian traffic, but I think that with Patton Avenue, I think that including more pedestrian access, more safe ways for people to be able to walk around, I think that that is something we really want to engage with, because we can see that with infrastructure like this, it is very much that Field of Dreams quote, if you build it, they will come. And we want to try and make sure that we are increasing these sorts of opportunities. As terms of what would I want to see with the I-26 changeover, that is something that with the Merriman Avenue change, a lot of folks in that area felt let down. Some people even would say betrayed, because a lot of changes happened without their consultation. And so for me to be consistent with what I've heard from people who were most affected by it, I would want to make sure that we had some forums to talk to people and say, hey, this is what we're thinking. But for me, as somebody who uses a lot of this infrastructure but doesn't live along that infrastructure, I would like to see more multimodal options included. Not to the detriment of saying, okay, well, we're going to make this the main way, and I've heard some people talk about we want to make this whole thing one way, one traffic only, and I think that's kind of too far to the other extreme. I still want to make sure that we have an inclusive plan. And so that's really the big message I would say for it, is making sure that we have more inclusivity in our designing.
Okay. Sidewalks and improved bus services are things that residents have been calling for years. How would you help push those efforts forward?
So with sidewalks, I think that some of this is we just need to get building. There's been a lot of discussion in certain areas about how wide should the sidewalk be? Should it match a certain style? Some of it is just go ahead and build the thing. You know, get a sidewalk down, make sure it matches with the design for the city, just put them out there. Some places, there are questions about land acquisition. There are questions about what is the right way to be meeting our future needs, because they anticipate a community changing a lot. So that's why, again, I'm big on nuance. Different neighborhoods have different needs. If you say, I want to build a sidewalk out of my neighborhood where I don't have a sidewalk, I'd say, yes, you know, feel free. You want to take some of my yard to put a sidewalk there? Great. You know, talk to my neighbors. If everybody else agrees, let's do this thing. But for some neighborhoods, they're going to say, well, we don't really have a lot of room. We would like to see maybe this road do become a one lane, you know, bike lane, or, you know, whatever. Where they have no bike lane and they have one lane road, or they say we're going to have one and one and, you know, a very small sidewalk. Again, I want to talk to people and see what's right for them. But I also do want to make sure that we're increasing these multimodal options. As far as the buses, my big thought on this is we have seen a lot of these bus discussions, like talking about we need to have increased coverage on S3 and S6 to South Asheville. And that's pretty plain. If you try to take the bus down through there, there is clearly a missing opportunity to make sure that we are getting enough frequency and volume of option down that corridor. There's a lot of housing that is underserved. So what I would like to see is kind of a borrowing of an idea and a little bit of a tweak for us from what I've seen from like Warren, North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, and use a microtransit bus system like you see Mountain Mobility use. But envision this, we basically divide up the city into zones, and we have one of these mobility buses committed to that zone, and all it does is pick up people from their neighborhoods and take them to the closest major bus line. And so that way, you can just say, all right, instead of, for me, if I wanted to go, I don't have terribly far, I would have to walk about a 10-minute walk for me to get to the closest bus. But where it had been previously, I would have had to walk up to an hour because where they had the bus line go originally. And obviously, I'm not going to walk an hour if I need to get somewhere quickly, that has to be something I plan way out in advance. If we want to get buy-in to where people can really majorly use the bus all the time, it needs to be very accessible. So if you have this microtransit that comes along and it says, okay, we're going to have some nominal, smallish fee for the convenience factor and say maybe $2, $3, the regular bus being a buck, but you say, we're going to have this be $2 or $3, and all it's going to do is take you from there to the bus line so you can get there. And if you're at one of the major bus stops, it'll take you back to the head of your, to the mouth of your neighborhood, so that way it can dramatically decrease the amount of time you're walking. So the longest time you're walking is your street. Mm-hmm. You now, that gives you a couple of profound new options where now if you're worried about the distance, that's gone. If you are worried about making sure that if you're trying to get to somewhere quickly and you say, okay, well, I'm trying to just go to the bank. I got to go over there and quickly make a payment on something, transfer some money or something from, you know, one account to, from one account at one bank to a thing at another bank. And you have to go physically do it for some reason. I, you know, obviously most people now would probably do it through an app. But point is that you now could just go, and I would envision that the city would either use one of the app infrastructures that these other cities have done, or they could use a dispatch system where you can call. But the idea is that however we do it, get that going to get more transit to more places. So that way, what this really does for us is it also helps us to reach these disparate communities. So folks who are not quite on that beaten path, but they were forced out because of the sprawl, because we weren't being proactive about how we built housing. Now they can access our major bus lines without us having to pay $100,000 to send a full-size bus out to their neighborhood. And it tells us where do we need more growth, so we don't need $300,000 transit studies. We can just start iterating and learn by doing. And by meeting the people there, they're going to tell us where to build. They're going to tell us what do we need to be expanding.
The legality or illegality of drugs certainly is not city council's purview. But if you're elected, would you consider working to put the enforcement of marijuana prohibition at the lowest priority for the Asheville Police Force and allocating significant money to social services for other efforts such as employment subsidies and training to reintegrate drug war victims?
Yeah, I think that the, again, being a sciencey person, the data is pretty clear that in terms of societal ills, marijuana usage, pretty far down there. What we need to be doing is finding ways to help people to cope with whatever's going on in their lives, because that whole notion of it being a gateway drug obviously didn't pan out. There's the science has not shown that. But for some people, finding that they can self-medicate rather than receive therapy, receive treatment, receive the whatever they need from the world is not working for them. So we do need to make sure we're having more treatment options to kind of help people to heal. In terms of what the city can do, I wish that we could do more profound stuff, but I want to kind of focus on these core areas first. So, but simple steps like just asking APD, hey, change this prioritization. Yes, I would be on board with that.
Cool. What are your thoughts on short-term rental restrictions and the flagrant violations of the current regulations? Do you believe the city should act to make Airbnb accountable with regards to its refusal to provide key data that would facilitate Asheville's enforcement of its current regulations?
If there was legal grounds for them to do so, I would support it. I'm not a lawyer either. I try to be honest about what I know and don't know. And so if we do have the legal right to do that, absolutely. I think that if you have a law, it should apply to everybody equally. And if you have a big, powerful actor that is breaking that law, you need to make really sure that you are bringing them to justice at every opportunity that you can. In terms of how I feel about it in the city, I know that a lot of folks feel that they want to have they feel like it's a restriction on their property rights to not be able to operate an Airbnb. But I think the city has found a pretty good middle ground by saying you can have a homestay, where if you're living on the property and you're renting out your property, I think that's a pretty good balance for where we're at, especially considering how little housing we have. So, you know, while I want to acknowledge some of the homeowners' pain there, I also think that it's for the good of the community that we continue to have a restriction for now. Now, if we get to a point where we're just drowning in housing and we say, oh, there's all this open air, what are we doing with this? Maybe we can come back to that issue. But for now, no, absolutely. And in terms of making sure that we have these enforcement, anything that we can do to make sure we're enforcing the laws we have on the books, we should.
Mm-hmm. And finally, CJ, is there anything else that you would like to let voters know that we maybe didn't discuss before we let you go?
Yeah, I think that something that is very important to me is making sure that we are also being proactive in thinking about opportunities that people have to get more income, basically. Because usually this is, when I've brought this up before, I've been told, oh, the city council doesn't usually do this, but the city council used to be a lot more proactive in these sorts of things, I feel like. But again, maybe that's rose-tinted glasses from remembering how I actually used to be. But the gist of what I'm wanting to get at is this. When we're talking about opportunities, we have this really great industry in the tourism industry, and working in hotels and stuff like that, that can be a really great career. But that's not everybody's dream. And I don't want to break that down. What I want to do is widen the base. And instead of having a really tall singular tower, I want to have a wide-based pyramid with a whole bunch of options that gives people other ways that they can succeed to be able to continue on in the community. And I would like us to see about helping to give people more opportunities to maybe start a small business, to give them some space where they could try to start their idea and see if their dream is something that people are interested in paying them for. So that way they can get ahead, because while we can't change the economy is obviously well beyond the borders of Asheville and well beyond the limits of the city council, I do see a changing world around us that is going to continue to put pressure not just on the people of Asheville, but also on the city itself and its capacity to be able to help them. So I want to make sure we're being proactive about giving people more chances to kind of get ahead, because when people thrive and when the community is resilient, we can be more resistant to these big changes.
Thank you very much, Charles C.J. Domingo, running for city council. Thank you.
Thank you very much, KP.